You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series.
Perspectives on an Intellectual Career with Larry Saltzman. This lecture was recorded as part of Ayn Rand Conference Global's How to Put a Dent in the Universe, a conference examining an intellectual's role in society and how it can shape the world.
Okay, thanks. As Keith said, I'm the litigation director at Pacific Legal Foundation, and that's a nonprofit organization engaged in strategic constitutional litigation. I call it PLF for short. And my role there is to shape the organization's overarching legal strategy. I help roughly 40 attorneys bring effective cases in the service of individual rights and constitutionally limited government. And just to give some sense of the work, PLF has brought 15 cases to the United States Supreme Court during the past three decades. We're currently litigating about 100 cases in state and federal courts across 30 roughly states. And we file friend of the court briefs in about 50 other cases litigated by other people each year. And so to do that work, as you might imagine, I have a law degree. I have about 15 years experience as a litigator. I'm not an intellectual in the same way that Adam or Brad Thompson or Robert Mayhew is, in the sense of directly teaching ideas. I see my role as a professional who works with ideas and tries to persuade others, especially judges and politically engaged people, about fundamental moral and legal concepts. In that sense, there's a strong intellectual component to my career. And because of that, about halfway into my career as a lawyer, I became a student at the Ayn Rand Institute's Objectivist Academic Center. And I was fortunate to study with Ankar and with Keith and others, and I'll say a little more about that later. But day to day, what the job means is a lot of writing to lawyers and to the general public, mostly about constitutional issues. It's a lot of editing of other people's writing. I'm helping people clarify their own thinking and their writing. I'm ensuring consistency of themes and positions that the organization is taking over time and across topics with respect to its mission. And there's a lot of time spent with other people, just one-on-one coaching or thinking or chewing ideas to help refine ideas that other people are bringing to the organization and to refine their action plans to move those ideas about the law into new jurisprudence through litigation. And so some of the most important work is understanding our ideas in relation to the audiences that we're trying to address, helping make those ideas more objective, more persuasive. A lot of the job is just helping colleagues get out of their own head and their perspective and into the perspective or the needs of their intended audiences, because that's really what it takes to gain an effective hearing for your ideas. And so let me step back a little bit and talk about the public interest law or strategic constitutional litigation. It's for those who are not familiar with it, it's not like a regular law practice. You know, people don't come in the door and say, I have a legal problem and I want your help. And then you charge them money to do it for them. Rather, the purpose of strategic litigation is to change the law, to change society. And so it involves taking on individual cases to create a larger cause. It's not just securing justice or a win in one case. That means, as an organization, I'm figuring out what are the important problems that we want to address. And then we go out to find clients and we're offering them free legal representation so that we can advance our mission through their case. And that work is funded primarily through financial contributors who want to see us change the law. But it's also very much a profession, it's a law practice. And that means to succeed, you have to be very good at the skills of being a lawyer, the rules of procedure and evidence and taking depositions and engaging in discovery and the practical tactics of courtroom practice. And ultimately what we're trying to do and what I'm trying to do is use those tools to move the law in a direction according to our ideology, our moral theory, our perspective on the Constitution. And we're just choosing one case at a time, perhaps building campaigns of cases over many years to move the law in increments as the law must move, with some end goal in mind. And the approach that I take to that is, and I think it's informed by my background in objectivism, is building strategic campaigns around difficult social problems or conflicts where we can demonstrate that the application of better ideas solve real problems in the real world. And by doing so, we get judges to adopt those rules or ideas. Adam talked a little bit about the balance between theory and practice in his profession. And strategic litigation is where I found that for myself. You have to be competent as a sort of nuts and bolts lawyer, but you're also guided by ideas and a mission, which is more intellectual challenging, I think, than a typical attorney, especially one that doesn't practice constitutional law. And those constitutional issues, they necessarily involve deeper questions of history, of legal and moral philosophy. And you have to have, at least implicitly, I think for those of us who are objectivists, explicitly, a theory of how social change occurs. And that's the thing that most attracted me to this work. I enjoy using my mind most on what I think of as the sort of middle level of ideas, or applying ideas to immediate social problems. I didn't want to write books where the result of your effort maybe, you know, many years later down the road where it emerges. I also knew I wasn't happy with a prior business career I had, where the results were very clear month to month, but where I was missing intellectual challenge. And so with law, and especially this area of strategic constitutional litigation, I have the best of both of those worlds. I'm dealing with ideas. Those ideas are a cause of the results that I'm seeking, but I'm getting feedback regularly, whether it's winning or losing in an individual case, or judging the results of a multi-year campaign of cases that we might be building in order to get an issue to the United States Supreme Court, or even measuring over the course of, say, a decade or more, where you're just asking occasionally, okay, we're going to draw a line and sum up. We've done, you know, 20 cases over 10 years in this area of law. Have we made a positive change? Do we need to redirect? Is there something wrong with our theory, something wrong with our strategy, something wrong with the capacities or tactics? And so what I love now is not just litigating, but helping others frame their cases and build these strategic campaigns in creative and clearer ways. I should note, you know, about choosing the profession, I really got the idea very early, long before I was a lawyer, from a lecture that I heard on an audio tape from an objectivist summer conference that was given in the 1980s. And it talked about how it might be valuable for lawyers to defend capitalism the way sort of progressive lawyers had for decades been defending government programs. And it was just an idea that piqued my interest. And I instead went into a business career for 5, 6, 7 years. But that idea stayed with me. And as I learned through the business career that I was kind of missing an intellectual challenge, that came to the fore for me. And I started thinking more about law, started figuring out what I want to do next to inject that intellectual aspect to my career. And the fact that I like this middle level of ideas that I was talking about, and that fairly constant feedback of, is what I'm doing working? I was able to combine the best of sort of a business career where you're managing things with an intellectual career where the results are driven ultimately by the ideas. And so let me just talk about those ideas a bit more, and in the context of PLF. PLF was my first job after I clerked for a judge after law school. I left for other firms for some time and I came back in 2015. And so I've been there since then. But PLF was founded in 1973 for the purpose of advancing the principles of constitutionally limited government through litigation. And today we describe our purpose as preserving and advancing American ideals of individualism and liberty in the law. We're working to establish a rule of law under which people can live peacefully and productively in their pursuit of happiness. Sort of echoes the concepts in the Declaration of Independence. We were the first public interest law firm established for that purpose, but there has grown up over the years a pretty large movement of law firms that think of themselves as allies to advance liberty in various areas of the law. And there are maybe 500, maybe more, but around there, lawyers around the country, a lot of professors allied, who think of themselves as working loosely in a movement of allies in this service of this purpose. And so I think, you know, as Adam said, a lot of his work has been cited by justices of the United States Supreme Court, and his articles have been cited. I think likewise, this movement has, this sort of legal movement for liberty, has made substantial impact on the course of American constitutional law in the past 40 years. And I'm happy to think that it's an accelerating and positive impact over the last, say, 15 years. And PLF and myself, I differentiate ourselves in that movement of larger allies by occupying an explicitly individualist element of the American legal tradition. Since coming to lead the organization's strategy, we've revolved around basically five areas of law: property rights, economic freedom, equality before the law, free speech, and the constitutional separation of powers. So that's a little bit about the career. I'd like to say something about the difference that objectivism has made in my approach to the work. Really, it's changed the way I approach the subject of constitutional law, and it's changed the way I've managed my own career. Objectivism made it clear that, to me, that the entire context of constitutional law in the last, say, 100 years occurs within a larger battle between individualism and collectivism. And that seems simple, may seem simple to you, but really seeing how that conflict has occurred, the deeper reason why, it has taken a lot of intellectual work. And my understanding of the philosophy has helped me determine what's important. So it helps me almost daily choose the subjects that I'm litigating, the client kind of clients that we take on, the arguments that we're choosing to make, how to frame those arguments. And integrating the objectivist ethics in my own life has helped me make a lot of choices about my career path. One special aspect of that is that understanding objectivism has helped me maintain idealism and persistence over time in my career, because the values at stake are personal and maybe more real to me than others. But that sort of sense of idealism and persistence gets to another aspect that objectivism has helped me with. The reality is that the prevailing trends in law in the United States are against us, or at least they have been for most of my lifetime. I've lost about as many cases as I've won in my career. And by definition, trying to change the law through litigation means that the precedent is against you. You can expect to lose over and over until one day, after years of fighting, an appellate court settles things in your favor, or maybe the Supreme Court accepts your case, or the legislature makes a change based on the injustices you've exposed. And so one thing objectivism has given me is an understanding of the division of labor involved in cultural change. It's important that I'm working on the law, but as I'm doing that, I'm understanding that you can't fundamentally change the culture through law alone. That requires a bigger change in moral ideals and philosophy generally. And I've watched many other people in my field burn out because they lose too many times in the court, and it feels like they're banging their head against the wall, or they go into the profession thinking you can sue themselves to freedom, or you can sue society into freedom. Sometimes they stay in the work, but they grow cynical and bitter, and sometimes they burn out and leave. I think objectivism has largely inoculated me from that experience, because I understand this division of labor regarded in as it pertains to cultural work. I can use lawsuits to tee up issues for public discussion. I can have a measurable influence in slowing down or reversing bad trends in law through the right lawsuits. But part of what I believe I'm doing is providing time for our country and for other intellectuals who are working with the same ideas in different fields or at a different level to make the broader case for individualism and liberty. And so knowing that, being associated with some of those other people, has a huge psychological benefit. And I'm trying to respect Keith's request for time, so I'll try to end a little bit earlier, or at least I'll move on to the final thing, which is I want to talk about the OAC, you know, what difference it made to attend that program and study under knowledgeable objectivists. And there are some very concrete benefits I got there. Writing skills. I learned to write more persuasively by being more objective, and how to understand and bridge the context of one's audience to see a point. And I took a course with Keith many years ago that really helped me in that, particularly writing for non-legal audiences. The OAC caused me to understand more deeply the objectivist theory of history and this hierarchy of ideas. That helps me almost daily distinguish fundamental issues from less important ones. And a seminar with Ankar was a model in teaching me how to think independently about new subjects and philosophically about those new subjects. Through the education, I more completely internalized an understanding of why it was important for me to infuse my professional advocacy with a moral perspective. That has helped me time and again bring other people to the side of my case, show them the perspective I'm bringing, and it brings allies to the cause. And I took the OAC course well after reading all of Ayn Rand's essays and Dr. Peikoff's lecture courses and his book on OPAR. And yet the experience was a great leap in my understanding, and it's had benefits throughout my career and personal life. So let me just conclude and say, being intellectual, I think, means taking responsibility for shaping the future. It means acting to develop and advance better ideas to influence the culture you live in. And it's been personally meaningful for me to have an integrated philosophic approach to that work, because I want that work to add up to something over the course of decades. And so if you're motivated to develop and advance ideas, keep at it. I recommend you get good training from the OAC. And I think whether it's the direction that Adam took or Robert took, or a more practical one that I've taken, I think you're likely to find a path to combine your career with your idealism.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.